Good morning. This is Chair Peter Fisher. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Behavioral Health Policy Division to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Frederick.
Present.
Frankie. Entering the room right now. Backer. Might be him too. Baker.
Baker, present.
Becker Finn, excused. Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Katiza Watoon, excused. Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Moeller.
Present.
Pearson. Pearson. Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Let's see, Backer. Well, regardless, we have a chair, we have a quorum, Mr. Chair. We also have a chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kroos. Quorum is present. We will move on to our next agenda item. That will be the approval of the minutes for March 9th, 2022. Are there any questions or corrections to the minutes? If not, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the March 9th, 2022 meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair. I'll move the minutes.
Sounds great. Thank you, Representative Frankie. Representative Frankie moves approval of the minutes for March 9th, 2022. Please unmute for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, we have three bills on the agenda today, and then we will also be wrapping up the Adult Mental Health Initiative presentation that we started last week. We'll be hearing testimony from the counties, and there'll be time for questions, and the Department of Human Services will also be here to answer any questions. So we'll get started. Our first bill this morning is going
Chair,
to-
Chair Fisher, yes. Representative Backer is present.
Thank you, Representative Backer. We will note that you are present. Thank you, sir.
Sorry to interrupt you, Chair.
That's all right. So we're going to get started this morning. I'd like to welcome Representative Bolden to the committee. You have House File 4021. So I will move that House File 4021 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. And Representative Bolden, I see you have the A1 amendment. Would you like me to move the A1 amendment for you?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I will move the A1 amendment to House File 4021. Representative Bolden, would you like to explain your amendment, please?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A1 amendment includes some technical assistance from DHS on licensing clarification. It makes a specification that the bill focuses on children as the population to be served and enhances clarity on how the service can be funded.
Okay, very good. Members, this is the first committee stop, so this amendment puts the bill in the shape the author would like, but are there any questions for Representative Bolden before we adopt it? Not seeing any hands. This will be a voice vote. Please unmute. This is going to be a vote to adopt the A1 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment, the A1 amendment for House File 4021 is approved. Representative, to your bill, if you'd like to explain it to the committee, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, committee members. I am grateful to be before you to present House File 4021, which would establish a Children's Crisis Stabilization Service. Families, providers, counties, and advocates are in agreement that a children's crisis stabilization is greatly needed, now more than ever, as we know too many children in mental health crisis are boarding in emergency departments or are charged and are getting access through juvenile justice, and too often are not receiving the crisis stabilization care that can meet the child's immediate needs. This language was designed to support expedient implementation for the purpose of establishing and growing this most needed level of care. I have two expert testifiers to share more about the importance of this service and the design of this bill. Sue Abderholden from NAMI, Minnesota, and Tim Hunter, representing the 10 Southeastern Minnesota counties that collaborated to create a new crisis stabilization service called the Southeastern Regional Crisis Center. So with that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would turn it over to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Holden. We will take the first testifier, Ms. Sue Abner Holden. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abner Holden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. I want you to imagine your child sobbing, so sad that they are telling you that they don't want to live. Your 13-year-old is suicidal. As a parent, your heart aches for them and you feel helpless to fix it. You bring them to the ER hoping that they can help, but while your 13-year-old is clearly distressed, they don't have an actual plan to take their life and the hospital beds are full, so they tell you to take them home. Your mind bounces from wanting them to come home to wanting them to be admitted. But mostly you are scared because you don't know how to help your child and yet you know they need help. The depression and suicidal thoughts are only one example. We've seen children being aggressive, cutting themselves, hurting others, having full-blown panic attacks, refusing to leave their room or go to school. And as a parent, you know this isn't typical behavior. You know they are symptoms of a mental illness or poor mental health, and there is simply nowhere to go. There are long waiting lists for outpatient treatment, and so you watch your child's symptoms worsen. This is all too often a reality for many parents. The pandemic has taken a toll on our children's mental health. We've seen an increase in depression and anxiety. We've seen overwhelming grief from children who lost a parent or caretaker to COVID. We've seen children struggle with being successful at school, not just academics, but socialization. But if the hospital won't or can't admit your child, what do you do? Some parents have refused to take their child home and now are threatened with losing custody while their child is in the child protection system. Some children have waited in the emergency room for days or weeks, waiting for a bed or waiting for the crisis to resolve itself. There's nothing that you, the legislature, can do to magically fix this, but there are some steps that you can take that would help. In the adult system, we have crisis homes, places where adults can go who don't need hospital level of care, but are in or heading towards a crisis. We don't have them for children, and we need them. In 2015, the legislature required DHS to conduct a study on how to develop and fund children's crisis residential services. 2 years later, that report was completed after research, interviews with families, youth, and providers. NAMI Minnesota and Aspire worked together on the report. Recommendations including bypassing the path to residential treatment to ensure timely access, providing short-term and longer-term crisis stabilization. Families stated that they wanted more of a facility type versus a small group home to ensure that more qualified staff were available to help their child. The bill before you takes that first step to helping us quickly develop crisis residential stabilization services for children. I urge your support for this bill. Our children can't wait. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abner Holden. Our next testifier is Mr. Timothy Hunter. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Committee. Excuse me. I am Tim Hunter. I'm the Regional Program Coordinator for the CREST Adult Mental Health Initiative here in Southeast Minnesota, and I was the project lead for our Southeast Regional Crisis Center, which you can see behind me. And so I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4021, and thank you to Representative Bolden for authoring this important legislation. We see this bill aims to kind of create a pathway for children experiencing mental health crises to access much needed support and safety. You know, as we continue to feel the impacts of these times, now is a critical time to obviously invest in our mental health system and specifically children early in their experience of mental health symptoms. So, you know, thanks to the work done in 2018, we were fortunate here in Southeast Minnesota to have received the bonding funds to construct a mental health crisis center. So as a 10-county region and community of providers, hospitals, health plans, and advocates, we set out to include a children's residential service component. So to make this a reality, we had a number of certifications that we had to go through to ensure access and care for individuals that any individual that comes to our door. So with our operational partner, Nexus Family Healing, we offer 24/7 access to trained mental health professional staff. We provide crisis assessments, individualized crisis stabilizations in a warm, trauma-informed, and person-centered environment. Now, for the adult side of the facility, this process was actually pretty easy, kind of understanding the certifications, where this falls as a kind of laid out plan and our licensure and all those things. For youth, it wasn't that simple. you know, we had to actually kind of find a path to make this work. And so we ended up having to use a shelter license to make sure that we have residential services available for children and families. Now, this method of service delivery does not offer any ability to bill Medicaid for these services and for children in need. And, you know, as they stay in our center, you know, we use unique and kind of strong partnerships to cover those costs. Nor does it offer any clear direction on the services that should be offered, the staff qualifications, and those things that currently offer the services. We have trained mental health professional staff and practitioner staff, but that's not clearly outlined currently in statute. So we have been providing services since end of July of 2021, and can see the great impact it has had on our communities. So we know as a nation, we are seeing an increase in those reporting thoughts of suicide, and more locally, we're seeing a rise in the number of youth and children coming in with high levels of anxiety and high levels of depression. Our model offers a no wrong door policy to any mental health symptoms, impacting somebody's ability to kind of go about their day-to-day life. Children and families are coming to our doors seeking help to manage very unique circumstances that greatly impact their mental health. As a result, over half of the individuals that we serve are self-referrals or referrals from a family member. Next on our kind of a referral list is hospitals coming in third in terms of referring folks from the emergency department that don't need that level of care, but they don't want to send them home. So right now, on average, our children are staying in our facility about 7 days. And we're seeing children and families for, again, many, many reasons. But oftentimes, this is the first time they're accessing the mental health system. And so navigating that is really, really complicated. So not only are we helping really offer the coping with the current crisis, bridging services until we can get communities, providers involved, but we're also helping families really navigate a really, really complex system and to ensure really quality follow-up care. And over about 60% of our individuals that we're seeing are currently on a Medicaid program. So just to kind of paint the picture of kind of how this works currently right now is we have an individual just recently that was dropped off at the Southeast Regional Crisis Center. The individual was scared, alone, and described as really fragile. The mental health staff spent hours with the individual upon initial assessment, making sure the services were the right fit. It was determined that the best place for the individual to stay was in our short-term crisis residential stabilization unit. During those 10 days, this individual thrived. They worked on repairing family relationships. They engaged with staff and other residents. They shared goals. We worked on finding hope for the future. And they also worked with the other residents to kind of help them find their hope too. We arranged a safe discharge and then continued follow-up services after that back in the community. And so, you know, as we're kind of looking at this, by passing House File 4021, we can kind of begin the conversation in Minnesota on being able to offer the safe environment to children in crisis. Again, we ask that we are, you know, funding these programs that can support children at any time, 24/7 during a crisis before it becomes an emergency. So again, I express my gratitude to the committee, the chair, and Representative Bolden for hearing this bill today, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. I will open it up for questions. Does anyone have any questions at this point in time? Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden. This seems like a really good bill. Parts of this that I'm reading really do define the need of an explanation of crisis. So am I understanding this right, Representative Bolden, that this bill has no cost or does not require any form of payment system? It's just a basic straight policy bill allowing for this service to occur.
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Franke. We are awaiting a fiscal note, but this is largely policy, correct? And I would open it to my testifiers if they had anything to add with that.
Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Franke, so it's partially a Medicaid service, right? And in some of the facilities it would be, which is of course a forecasted program, it would be state Medicaid dollars only because the residential facility might be what we call an institute for mental disease. And the room and board would be paid as we do now for residential treatment. So we're not necessarily adding beds totally. We might see some more open up in the future, which would be great, but some of the current residential facilities would set aside some beds so that children would go more frequently through them, but at least have somewhere to go. And I'm sure the Department of Human Services would probably add something as well.
Is there anyone from the Department of Human Services that would be able to add to this conversation? If you'd like to unmute and identify yourself, and please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Christy Graham with the Department of Human Services. We have not done a fiscal analysis on this, but we will take a look and try to understand if this would potentially increase spending in the forecast and get back to the budget division when we have a fiscal note complete.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Graham. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the policy here, I just want to make sure I'm getting this correct. I believe it starts at line 2.30. When the level of care is conducted, the county board or any other entity may not determine the screening of the child, referral or admission to residential treatment facility is not appropriate solely because services first provided the child's less restrictive setting and the child failed to make progress. I won't keep going, but basically, if I get this correct, what we're saying is that regardless of whether they were in a less restrictive and didn't make progress or not, that if in crisis, they get the service, correct? Is that the gist of it, Representative Bolden?
Representative Bolden or Ms. Abderholden?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's correct. This really is aimed at getting that care to kids in crisis. So yes, and would if Ms. Abderholden would like to add anything.
Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Frankie. Yes, we didn't want them to be delayed in being able to access that care. So a mental health professional or physician can do that immediate recommendation and referral.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Representative Frankie.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden and Ms. Abderholden. That's exactly what I was hoping.
Hey, thank you, Representative Frankie. Next on the list is Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm really happy to support this bill, Representative Bolden. I had a question for Mr. Hunter, and it was just a follow-up on what you said about the aftercare, and I'm just curious if you could talk a little bit more about the follow-up you do with children when they leave, and I know there's a shortage of providers, and if you could just briefly, though, speak to what kind of care you provide after, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Hunter, go ahead, please.
Thank you for the question. Yes, so I would like to be, so we are really strongly tied with our mobile crisis programs as well. And so we do a lot of referrals back to our mobile crisis teams for crisis stabilization. But if the individuals have an established kind of care plan, we also then reference back and support the individual to get kind of either on, schedules or, engage with their case manager. So really, it's really, really individualized. But oftentimes we're making referrals back to our crisis stabilization teams offered through our mobile crisis teams as well, to make sure that they have ongoing support through that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. Representative Mueller, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mueller. I do not see any other questions at this point in time, so I will give Representative Bolden the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again, committee members, for hearing this bill this morning. We wish this was not needed, but the reality is that it is. There are kids in crisis, across our communities, across the state, and so this really is aimed at getting them the care that they need when they need it, and so thank you again.
You're welcome. There being no further discussion, I move that House File 4021, as amended, be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroos will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Mueller.
Mueller, aye.
Mueller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Mr. Chair, we have 10 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 10 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. House File 4021, as amended, is recommended for referral to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Bolden, and your testifiers for being here this morning. Next up, committee, we have House File 4105 from Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson, would you like to move that House File 4105 be recommended for referral to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Yes, Chair, that is my intent.
Okay, very good. I know that at one point there was a possibility of amendment that might be coming to the committee but did not make it. So as can you tell us a little bit about what the amendment is? This amendment will go on at the next stop, but if you could, Representative Thompson, tell us a little bit about the amendment and then explain your bill. And then I see that you have a number of testifiers. We'll take the testifiers and then we'll take questions.
Chair, I don't think there's going to be an amendment added. I'm not
sure. Okay. All right. Very good. Well, then go ahead and explain your bill, sir.
Chair, this bill is in response to the overwhelming need for behavioral health services in the most underserved communities in our state. These communities are underserved, and yet they deal in many cases with the greatest burdens of stress, trauma, and what we call the social determinants of health. They suffer from our great racial disparities in health, education, income, and contact with the criminal justice system. You know, these burdens weigh on their health and their behavioral health. And these communities are made up of Minnesotans who are African-American, Native American, African immigrants, Latinos, Asians, and Pacific Islanders. At the same time, we have great providers in our community who are dedicated to responding to the behavioral health needs in these communities with assessment, counseling, treatment, diagnosable disorders from anxiety and depression to substance use disorders and severe mental illness. But these providers themselves are also stressed and overburdened. They don't have the resources that they need to effectively respond to all those who need them in their communities. This bill actually addresses the gap between in the need in these underserved communities and the response from our great behavioral health providers by offering grants to those behavioral health providers who have demonstrated that they are have strong relationships within our and cultural ties within our communities, especially the communities that they serve. These cultural pieces, they're key because it helps providers gain the trust of those in these communities who may distrust other health providers because they just don't feel comfortable in a cultural setting that they're not familiar with. So this bill is a lifeline to those culturally competent behavioral health providers who are doing this work but don't have adequate resources, because those who are not getting the care they need, you know, now they are our neighbors and are in their Minnesota. And also in Minnesota, we care about our neighbors. I know that, Chair. I know that we care about our neighbors here in this state. And so I thought this was an important piece of legislation to bring to the body. And so I want and with that, Chair, I want to pass it over to my testifier.
Okay, thank you, Representative Thompson. Next, we'll be moving on to our testifiers and reminding them that they have about 2 to 3 minutes each as we start. Our first testifier that we will start with will be Mr. Miles Wilson. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I hope you can all hear me okay.
Good morning. Fine. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Miles Wilson, and I'm the founder of United Not Divided, a nonprofit organization which focuses on mental health awareness, proper diagnosis, support, and treatment in the African American ADOS community. We partner with mental health professionals, life coaches, and mentors to help African Americans in Minneapolis reach their full potential to lead healthy, meaningful, and fulfilling lives. As someone who has access and uses mental health services, such as therapy, and has helped peers, friends, and clients open new doors and gain access to diverse range of mental health services, understanding the importance of having a diverse health field is critical to continue to support the awareness and benefits of mentors, therapists, and life coaches. House File 4105 that has been presented will help create opportunity. Opportunity for communities that are far behind statistically. The statistics provide an insight on different types of diagnoses that the African-American ADOS community battles every day, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD, anxiety, and depression, to name a few without that go without proper treatment. In 2019, suicide was the second leading cause of death in African-Americans for the age range 15 through 24. As a result of barriers that would cause prevention of proper care, such as limited availability to medication and health professionals, affordability, stigmas, language barriers, and lack of insurance or education, House File 4105 would then provide resources to assist with receiving proper care, diagnosis, understanding, and treatment. It also helps provide opportunity to fill in the space with health professionals for job placement and opportunities, creating a more diverse field, which may counter a few of those barriers that were previously mentioned and spark a new outlook on mental health practices, techniques, and treatments. So I want to say thank you for allowing me the time to testify this morning.
You're welcome, and thank you, Mr. Wilson, for being here. Next on the list, I have a Mr. Mark Anderson. If you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Anderson. I'm the executive director of Barbara Schneider Foundation. And for the last 20 years, I've been involved with mental health, behavioral health crisis response training with our police officers, corrections officers in our jails and across Minnesota and beyond. And what I've seen is that we've moved, unfortunately, a burden of people with behavioral health issues from the mental health system into our criminal justice system all too frequently, particularly for the communities that are being addressed in this bill. I've seen systematic injustice against born by the African-American, Native American, and the other communities mentioned in this bill. These communities bear an enormous burden of behavioral health crisis, as Representative Thompson mentioned. The issue I would like you to focus on is the question of trust. When we do behavioral health crisis response training, what we tell the officers is the main goal is to achieve trust. This is part of the problem here that's being addressed in this bill, is that many people in these communities, African-American community, Native American communities, lack the trust of our healthcare system. They lack trust of the behavioral health system. So we don't have the connections we need to have. But these culturally, what we call probably awkwardly culturally competent providers who are rooted in and tied to and come out of these communities have that trust relationship. And that makes it possible for them to make those connections, but they lack the resources to build that infrastructure within their communities. And I think that's what this bill seeks to address is that disparity and to provide a support for those particular agencies that have that trust relationship. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson, for your testimony. Next person I have on the list is Ms. Farhiho Khalif. And please correct me if I mispronounced your name. I can see you on there. You are muted. I'm assuming you're the coffee cup there. So you may have to mute yourself and introduce yourself, who you're with, and please start. Thank you.
Hi, my name, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today. House file, can you hear me? House file 4105. And also thank you so much, Representative Thompson, for taking the time to meet with the community. And also before I go on, I just want to mention that, yes, there will be amendment. I'm sorry if Representative Thompson did not get or your office on time. Either Mark can speak that or we can send it to your office, Mr. Chair, if that will be give us the opportunity. Either Mark can speak on it, or I don't know how this thing works about the amendment, but there's a little bit, some change in there. But
Ms. Khalif, you're breaking up a little bit there. I'm having a little difficulty hearing you. We'll have you continue. I missed hearing your name as you were starting. So if you could please mention your name again, And then we were hearing most of the rest of it, and then you can continue with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Farhil Khalif. I'm with Voice of East African Women, where we advocate for homeless and a lot of women and children who are daily going through regarding of the mental health and trauma, especially the last couple of years. I also want to mention, I don't know if you heard me before, I want to thank Representative John Thompson for his advocacy and support meeting with the community about these issues, about our behavioral health and mental health crisis that we face. This is One Minnesota. This is Bill. We were hoping that you support House File 4105. I am advocating every day to see the issues that we're dealing with when it comes to last 2 years, especially the corona pandemic, that we lost a lot of loved ones, and not only out of state, but around the country, especially George Floyd's revolution that it did start in our state in Minnesota. So this is a investment in our community, not only one community, but all community, the state of Minnesota. What I was saying earlier is Mark can speak about it. I know Chair did say there was amendment. Yes, this is a small amendment. And I don't know if Representative Thompson got it on time before we got to this hearing this morning. But I'm here just to say I'm in support of this bill. We've been fighting for, we continue to fight for our mental health crisis is more than ever. A crisis is a high skyrocketing in the state of Minnesota. This is an investment that you all will be brought to be invested for the state of Minnesota. I will ask for your support for House File 4105. This is urgent. This is needed. This is unity for all Minnesotans to come together for the crisis and our mental health. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ms. Khalif. I appreciate your testimony and thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next on the list for testifiers, I have Mr. Abraham Demog. If you'd like to go ahead and unmute yourself, introduce yourself to us and who you're with, and start your testimony, please. Is Mr. Demog out there? Not hearing him at this point, and I don't know if I see him.
I see him. He's in there, but maybe he muted. I don't know.
Thank you, Ms. Connolly, for pointing that out. Thank you. We will try again. Mr. Demog, can you try? Please try unmuting yourself for your testimony, please. I am not hearing him. What we'll do is we'll start taking questions, and if Mr. Demog is able to unmute and hear himself, we will come back to him at that point. In the meantime, I do have a first hand up from Representative Backer. Representative Backer, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair. If I'm seeing this correctly, the fiscal note of this is $50 million. How was that figure determined, that dollar amount? That would like some details on that, please. I don't know if the author can do that or one of the testifiers, but would appreciate that, please.
Representative Thompson.
I will refer to Jesus Christ, Mark. But before I refer to Mark, I'm sorry, my knee just locked in. Before I refer to Mark, you can't put a price tag on mental health, especially mental health and behavioral health in our community. Now more than ever, we need culturally intelligent mental health providers. When you look at the rise in violence in our community, a lot of kids are watching and witnessing their friends be murdered, young kids, carjackings in our community. And we've actually figured out a way to add more prosecutors, which is needed, more police officers, which is needed, by the way, needed. But we also can't just lock this problem away. We need mental health providers. And you can't put a price tag on as a member of our union, as a machinist, I was also a part of the negotiating team, the bargaining committee. always knew like it was a second price tag. Like it was always room for negotiation on the price tag. But how do you put a price tag on culturally intelligent behavioral health and mental health specialists when you see the need is so, so huge in these underserved communities? And so I would refer to Mark because Mark would have more insight, but thank you, Rep. Backer, for asking that question. I just want to refer that to Mark.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would just say that this is a grant program administered by the Minnesota Department of Health. And so these providers that are would be eligible for funding would submit a grant proposal to the Department of Health. And the judgment in terms of how much money of this money would actually be spent, you know, depends on, who applies for the funding and what the determination of the Department of Health is. One of the things I would say is that when we're out in the community meeting with the providers, the behavioral health providers, one of the things they talk about is a lack of infrastructure in the African-American community, behavioral health community, for example, the need to build that infrastructure because of the history, you know, and I know it's difficult to look back at the history, but historical trauma and these intergenerational trauma and these other behavioral health issues that these communities deal with require a significant response. And so, I don't have any need to defend a particular number, but that's why it was written as a grant program, because then those providers that are interested in utilizing this funding could submit a grant proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Backer.
Yes, Chair. My next question does, and I want to really understand what this bill entails, but in the bill it talks about culturally competent setting. I've not seen those three words put together before, so if someone could speak to what that entails, so I can better understand that, and I would appreciate that. What culturally competent setting entails, please. That's my last question.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Backer. Representative Thompson.
Chair, 2016, I witnessed my best friend, one of my best friends, and a coworker. He murdered right in St. Anthony. You guys know Philando Castile was one of my best friends who I work with. And then right after Philando, I lost my mother. Like directly after that, I lost my mother. And then right after that, my kid was shot 6 times at a funeral. So I had these, you know, everybody would say, John, go and talk to somebody. And you need to talk to somebody. And I also wanted to be a good dad. And so honestly, I never went to talk to a behavioral health specialist because I didn't see anybody who looked like me in our community. And I didn't want to just show up to any behavioral health specialist. And so people would say, well, you know, you're going to lose your mind. And I'm like, I'm not crazy. But I finally found a behavioral health specialist that I can go and see. When I say cultural setting, I felt comfortable sitting on this person's couch and talking about some of the things that I was dealing with. And one of the first things I said to her was, I was crazy for not coming to see you. I felt so good to be able to talk. And this is an ongoing thing for me, and I'll share that with you. Like I still, to this day, it's been since 2016 that I've seen this behavioral health specialist. Lo and behold, post George Floyd, she called me one day. I had something scheduled over there, and she's right in the Midway. And I couldn't see her anymore because her facility was burned down right in the Midway. And so I know what I'm saying, culturally competent setting. Like the people actually have to feel comfortable about even going into the building, because we always have this stigma, especially in the African-American community. I can't speak for other communities. We always have the stigma of like somebody out to get me. You know, and so I just want to make sure that people are comfortable in that setting would also create, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but this is like a true reality for many African-American men in our community. A lot of us are so macho that we don't want to go and see a behavioral health specialist, but some of us have underlying problems. Case in point, my friend Rajan, I spoke to him over the phone. I said, I'm going to come over tonight. And the very next morning, he hung himself in his garage. You know, so I understand the need. You know, and this is something that I'm very passionate about. I'm trying to kind of hard to get all of that out. But it's something I'm very passionate about. So I'm trying to be very careful and try to get everyone to understand why we need this in our community. And so I hope I answered your question the right way. And I can pass over to Mark if you want to elaborate a little bit more.
Okay, thank you, Representative Thompson. I'll hold off on passing over Mark because I see that one of our testifiers who had dropped off before is back on. So if I could take a pause on questions for a moment, we'll jump over to Mr. Abraham Demog. I see that you're here. If you'd like to identify yourself, tell us who you're with and begin your testimony, sir. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. My name is Abe Demage, and I'm business owner in South Minneapolis and Lake Street. I'm originally from Africa. When I hear about these things, it really hurts because I do have a family member who's been diagnosed with mental issue. And the thing about it is that I want to make a word to everyone, to all of us, is we all have one in our family. Maybe we don't talk about it. I've lost a 55-year-old uncle because of a mental health issue. Has been diagnosed. So mental health is not something that we need to take it very serious. Now that I see it in South Minneapolis, especially in the underserved area communities, we've seen it after the George Floyd murder. There's a lot of things that's been coming up. And I think we really need to be careful. We need to get a lot of resource and have it out. The young communities, especially the immigrants communities, are being exposed to extremely high drug, high everything and everything that I see. And it really, really hurt my feeling. And those are things that we need to have, you know, this kind of things that would lead them to other, you know, mental issues because their family are not, they're not raised by the same mom and the same dad. And I think the bill, the 4105, if we have more resources, especially for this communities, you know, mainly the African immigrants communities, it will save us. And we would not have any disparities. The resources we have is very, very limited. I think this bill will create more resources, more places for them to go. And I think, I don't know, I'm really supporting with this bill. And if you guys have any power to do it, because mental health does not have race or color or age into it. It comes in every color, in every ages. So I'm just here today to testify, you know, for the support of that bill 4105. Thank you so much for listening to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Demog. I appreciate that. Representative Frankie, if you have another question, and I'm also trying to keep an eye on the time for our other bill and then the rest of the hearing that we've got a little bit later on. So Representative Frankie, if you'd like to go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Thompson. I actually, I'll instead of phrasing it as a question, I'll just make a comment to Representative Thompson, maybe a little advice. I understand that we all want heroes and we want to be able to talk to people that we trust as the one testifier and people we can look up to or people that we feel we can open up to, especially when it comes to mental health issues, addiction, revealing yourself to others, and those are hard issues. But nowhere in this bill does it say that the definition of culturally competent, to Representative Backer's question, means nothing about somebody that looks like I do or similar. It's, and I'll just read this quick here when I Googled it. I'll just read what I feel is the definition part. A range of cognitive, affective, and behavioral skills that lead to an effective and appropriate communication with people of other cultures. So if Representative Thompson, if we're trying to get people of color into this industry or provide those gaps and fill them in within these organizations, let's put this in the bill. And I would support you on that because we need, just like we need teachers, more teachers of color, more people in areas that show success, we need to support those ideas. So I support you on that, Representative. My question is going to down to the bottom here. It says grants shall be used for outreach, assessment, behavioral programming, and to provide behavioral health education. At a $50 million price tag, I'm wondering, will this provide service to people? Will this these grants be able to help people to get help, or will it just provide to organizations to do these other things other than to allow somebody to get help? That's my question.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. Let's make it a great bill together. Let's make it a great deal together. And that's the only way we get some of the things that we need in our community, is we have to work together. And so I want to work with you to make this bill work for my community. And so I want to say thank you for that question, but that would be my answer. So let's work together and get this, because it's needed. It's really needed. So if I'm missing something, you know, like words, we can attack words, but I really want to attack the problem. And so let's work together, Rep. Frankie, and man, I really need support and help in my community when it comes to behavioral health and the funding. I know, like when we said it's a $50 million price tag, like I can remember like asking the body as a civilian and not a legislator. I can remember asking the body after Philando, can we just give the kids a hot lunch and a cold breakfast for free? And I can remember us saying, like, where are we going to find the money? And this was prior to COVID. Then post-COVID, now here we are delivering food with the school buses. So I know we can find a way to make the money work in our community. We just need help. And I want to work with this diverse group of leaders here to get this bill passed. So I welcome you to help me. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. And what I would suggest too is that I know that Representative Frankie, is I do know that Mark Anderson has been involved in working on drafting up an amendment that starts addressing, I think, some of the issues that you're raising. And I would encourage Mr. Anderson to connect with Representative Frankie and Representative Thompson to continue working on this language for the next committee stop that it goes into. So I want to say thank you, Representative Frankie, for raising the thoughts and offering some suggestions. I think with the three of you folks getting together, that we'll be able to have a better bill at an amendment to make the bill better at the next stop. So thank you. Representative Frederick, if you could be quick, please, and then I'd like to get on to the vote to get on to the next bill.
I'll just make a quick comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I truly want to say that we know that in educational settings that students learn better when there are adults in the classroom that look like them. We know in a medical setting that if someone's not feeling well, they go into a hospital, that if the providers that are there look like them, they get better service because they're more comfortable to be able to talk about their what's going on with them. Mental health is no different. The more that we can have a culturally competent workforce and a setting to provide services for people that look like the providers, the better off we as a state are going to be. So I just want to say thank you to Representative Thompson for the work that you're doing on this. It's a good bill, and I'm excited to support it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Frederick. Seeing no other questions, we will move on to voting for the bill. There being no further discussion, Representative Thompson renews his motion that House File 4105 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroll will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker Finn.
Becker Finn, aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Mueller.
Mueller, aye.
Mueller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes and zero nays.
There being 11 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails. House File 4105 is recommended for re-referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Thompson, for the bill, and thank you to the testifiers who took the time to be here today. Okay, committee, we are back to House File 3414. This is a bill that we had started hearing last week. I understand that Representative Frederick has been working with Representatives Baker and Frankie on this, along with the advocates and along with DHS. So we are bringing it back today. I know that there's a lot of work that's been done. I know that more work will still need to be done, but we'd like to make sure that we continue it in the process here. So what we will do is we'll take House File 3414 back up. So Representative Frederick will move House File 3414 be taken back up before the committee, and that it be recommended for re-referral to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Frankie, I see that you have an amendment. Would you like to move the A2 amendment and explain it to the committee?
Sure, Mr. Chair, I'll move that amendment.
I'm sorry. I apologize. That should be Representative Frederick. Sorry, but thank you, Mr. Representative Frankie, for straightening me out there.
I got you covered, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Frederick, would you like to move?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think that Representative Frankie would probably do a pretty good job presenting the amendment. As you said, Mr. Chair, that there has been lots of meetings with DHS. We met with Representative Frankie and Representative Baker last Friday to make sure that their feedback is also incorporated. The amendment itself is incorporating the feedback that we got from DHS in some language clarifications. There were some concerns about guest speakers, and so we tried to clarify that because we didn't want to have a scenario where there'd be a guest speaker and a provider would then just walk out of the room and walk away. So there is some language in there saying that there needs to be direct observation, and that way these providers can also debrief and kind of process through what the guest speaker was talking about with everyone who's receiving services. And so really it's as you said, there's more work to be done, but this is a product of a lot of collaboration and a lot of work. And I don't want to take up too much more time because I know that we do have testifiers.
Okay, sounds very good. Are there any questions regarding the amendment, the A2 amendment?
All right, Mr. Chair and members, Sarah Sunderman from House Research.
Yes, Ms. Sunderman.
To clarify, there's the A2 amendment is an amendment to the DE1 amendment, which was posted last week. So I believe we would need to move the DE1 amendment and then the A2 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Thank you for catching that and straightening us out. I appreciate it. So actually we will back up and we will first take up the amendment, the D1 amendment. So Representative Frederick will move the DE1 amendment. Are there any questions on the DE1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Okay, the DE1 amendment has been adopted. Representative Frederick will now move the A2 amendment to the amended House File 3414. All in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries, the A2 amendment is approved. Next, so the A2 amendment is adopted. So next we'll move on to Mr. Frederick, Representative Frederick. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Otherwise, we will move on to your testifier.
Mr. Chair, I think that we've had a lot of hearings on this bill already. I think just it'd be appropriate to turn over to the testifiers at this time.
Sounds very good. First testifier we have is Ms. Amy Delwu. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony, please.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members. Amy Delwo. I work with New Way as the Vice President of Public Policy, and I'm here today as the March President-elect. Mr. Chair, last week we did walk through the DE one amendment, so I'm not sure if you want some additional testimony on the bill. I think we were planning to stand for questions at this point, unless there, you know, unless there was something specific you wanted us to review once again.
Thank you, Ms. Dell. No, we were just wanting to know if there was anything else to add at this point in time. Appreciate you being here for questions. I know we've had a lot of discussion on this. I just want to make sure that there wasn't any other additional items. And would that be the same for Mr. Zerbes? Is there anything else that I, so that would be for questions only also. So at this point, are there, we have several people here able to provide answers to questions if there's any questions. So I'll open it up to the floor for questions. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick, for your work on this bill and for being very open to the discussion and as far as I'm concerned, doing some really hard work on this. This is quite a large bill and there's a lot of facets to it, and I want to thank March. I think personally, a lot of my questions to this point have been answered. I know that myself and Representative Baker have been in contact with March, with Representative Frederick, and we've had a lot of discussions. So I would just put it forward to my colleagues if they had any questions to ask them now. But I will be in support of this bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Frankie. I am not seeing any other hands at this point. And I want to say, also add my comments too, is I'd like to thank everybody for the hard work that's being done on this bill. This bill is going to be addressing a lot of issues out there that will help improve the environment for successful outcomes for those dealing with the addiction issues out there. I want to say a big thank you not only to Representative Frederick, but also to Representative Frankie and Baker, who've been working very hard alongside. I know there's still work to be done, and I very much appreciate the fact that everybody's working together on this. This is one of those great bipartisan efforts that will have a great bill for us by the end of the day. Representative Baker.
And Mr. Chair, just I want to also kind of repeat what Representative Frankie just said too. This is how you work on a good bill. I want to thank you as a chair to allow us to kind of bounce back and forth on this a little bit. We did take the time. I know we've talked about that before, but we need more of this around here. So this should be used as an example. And again, bill is a lot of things in it. And like Representative Frankie said, we'll continue to work on this. But I just, I know that sometimes our deadlines don't allow us to do this. So I just, I'm glad we got this bill up early. We had some time to work on it, but nice job, everybody. Again, Representative Frankie and Frederick, thank you for all your great work on this. And this is some really good stuff in here. So glad to be helpful any way that I can. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Baker. It's been great to have all this wonderful work going on. I'm looking forward to continue. There being no further discussion, Representative Frederick renews his motion that House File 3414, as amended, be recommended for re-referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroos will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker, Finn.
Becker, Finn, aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Moeller, aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. House File 3414 is recommended for re-referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Frederick, and everybody else who's been working so hard on this bill. Next item on the agenda is our last item, and we're going back to the presentation that was started last week on the Adult Mental Health Initiative Reforms Funding Formula Development that was started last week by the Department of Human Services. We've got several testifiers from the counties that are here. And so what we'll do is we'll take the testifiers and then we'll go back to questions after the test fires are done. I do know that we have Ms. Grom and Mr. Burdick from the department here to also be able to answer questions. So at this point in time, I would like to invite Ms. Angela Youngberg to introduce herself, who she's with, and to please start your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Angela Youngberg, and I'm the Director of Business Operations for Blue Earth County Human Services. I'm testifying today on behalf of Blue Earth County, the South Central Community-Based Initiative, which is our local adult mental health initiative, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, known as MACSA, and the Minnesota Inter-County Association, known as MICA. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. The report and subsequent plan to reform the AMHI system presented from the Department of Human Services last week is something that the county and the associations that I am representing simply cannot support. There are three themes woven into my testimony today. To effectively reform, to engage in reform, we must first understand the why and the history. Second, have a vision of where we're going as a system to reform. And third and last, be tenacious at driving at outcomes. For adult mental health initiatives, the most rudimentary outcome is access to services, and it's not a math formula. The report speaks very clearly and very well to the adult mental health initiatives being effective mechanisms for serving individuals with serious and persistent mental illness who are under or uninsured across the state of Minnesota. MACSA and MICA have legislative positions on adult mental health initiative reform. We support the continued evolution of building out our state's mental health system. We all feel that we have further to go as people across the state are yet unserved. We've heard about that frequently through the committee this morning. They still lack access to basic services, and we view the AMHIs not as pilots as they're referred to in statute, rather their infrastructure. The plan presented last week is the department's attempt at creating equity, transparency, and a defensible math formula to existing funding. The report and corresponding formula and implementation plan lacks a strategic vision for the mental health system, and it lacks any sort of focus on real outcomes to people. Again, to reform a system, we must know where we're headed. To travel to a new place, we must know what the desired outcome is, and a math formula does not achieve either. MACSA and MICA will not support any reductions to the overall adult mental health initiative grants, nor to individual regions or county allocations within the grants. Equity should be achieved through new long-term investments. This formula hurts residents in 32 of Minnesota's counties by reallocating $5.7 million from some and giving to others. It robs from one and pays the other. All 87 counties stand together in support of the premise that infrastructure grants should not take away from one to give to another. History. In 1995 to 2002, when the initial funding was established, the Department of Human Services did have a vision. The report does not share this. I can personally speak to it, having worked in the mental health system during this transition. The vision was to promote deinstitutionalization of individuals from the state hospitals. Limited funding was allocated to regions where those individuals were likely to reside, and the state knew a community-based infrastructure needed to be established. In some areas, the state invested money. In other areas, the state mobilized staff from the state hospitals. It's true that not each region received an equal share. There simply wasn't enough resource to go around at the time. The plan was to continually invest in the areas that did not receive funding in the beginning. This hasn't occurred in the way that it was meant to. The state's investment in adult mental health initiatives didn't continue to address the inequities. In fact, currently, counties invest around 2 times more local dollars than the state in these program areas specifically. Currently, mental health services are in the highest demand we've seen in years, and on average, providers with wait lists for adult mental health initiative services would need to increase services by over 20% just to meet the current demands. County and AMHI participants in the work group that the report referenced shared their voices were very limited. The discussion was not on AMHI reform as a visionary endeavor, rather to simply weight variables on an already determined formula. Some statements received from the participants were DHS invited us to the table, but it was not a partnership. The formula still doesn't sufficiently address racial inequity. And although the report, the map in the report says I was present for 100% of the meetings, I was not 100% in support of the outcome. It was an effort to comment on surface details without providing the opportunity to influence the purpose or intention, the actual foundation of the initiatives. Letters have been written from regions to DHS leadership imploring them to consider the negative effects of reform in this way, to no real response other than the work of the group has not yet been completed. So this is certainly, since this report has been released in February, this is a past comment. Speaking directly from the region I represent, the formula, if the formula is implemented, we will lose approximately 20 FTE in our local workforce, with impacts in psychiatry, nursing, community supports, jail diversion, crisis services, case management, and potentially other areas. This will undoubtedly result in increased hospitalizations, public safety concerns, and devastating effects on individuals. We're not the only region that will be forced to devolve our mental health system. This is the wrong direction. Now, for the regions that stood to gain funding in this formula, it is desperately in need. In some areas of the state, maintaining a base workforce in mental health is near impossible. They have yet to build out their infrastructure and have deserved the opportunity for many years. Counties see the current state as an opportunity to continue to advance the vision of a mental health infrastructure from so many years ago, rather than to come alongside a lacking vision of today. So I just thank you for your time and attention to this important topic for counties, and more importantly for the individuals that are impacted by these decisions. I urge you to hold counties and DHS to principles of reform, knowing the history, having a vision, and focusing on outcomes, even ones that are as basic as access to services. I will remain available for questions following my colleague's testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Youngerberger. Next, we have Ms. Lena Mersch. If you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with and start your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Linnea Mersch, and I'm the Director of Public Health and Human Services for St. Louis County. I'm also here as a representative of MACSA and MICA, and on behalf of our Region 3 AMHI. Thank you for the opportunity to share our perspective. A sentence in the summary of the legislative report recently filed by DHS explains, quote, "Initial funding determinations for AMHIs were not uniform, equitable, or transparent, and were based on proximity to state hospitals that closed in the 1990s. We heard from DHS's testimony last week that there wasn't a rhyme or reason to these allocations. On the contrary, a review of how the Moose Lake catchment area closure funds came to be for the 11 counties in northern and northeastern Minnesota most impacted shows a specific intention, and while not uniform in comparison to other regions, it was proportionate to the forecasted impact. 1992 legislation authorizing the closure of the state's Moose Lake Regional Treatment Center required DHS to ensure that community-based alternatives were adequate to meet needs within this area and that no additional local county property tax expenditures would be required to support services. While alternative funding was provided to support community-based care options through the counties, the promised state services were not developed. To this day, unlike other regions of the state, this area continues to lack local access to a community behavioral health hospital for short-term acute inpatient psychiatric care. Since the closure of the Moose Lake Regional Treatment Center in 1994, the 11 counties in this catchment area received $2.7 million annually to provide community-based mental health services. Funds are distributed directly to each county, and they have been distributed separate from the Adult Mental Health Initiative Fund. In 2023, the Department of Human Services plans to integrate the Moose Lake Alternative Funds into the statewide AMHI fund, and with the proposed formula changes effective 2025-26, our region will lose 25% of the newly combined total base. Nearly a million, and as Angie stated, These funds are used for local workforce, both at the county level and in our core community behavioral partners or community mental health centers. This work isn't a math formula to be achieved through equal allocations, as access, needs, and state services vary extensively across the state. Equality and equity are not the same. Unfortunately, the simplistic approach proposed here without regard to the why behind the allocations that constitute that base will result in an unnecessary reduction of essential services in 32 of Minnesota's counties. The historical allocation base comprises previous state investment, like what our region has received, and this needs to be taken into consideration with this work. So Minnesota counties are asking you to hold all counties harmless. We'll work with DHS on the needed updates to Minnesota Statute 245.4661 to reflect the current roles of AMHIs as the mental health infrastructure throughout our state. We'd welcome the opportunity to continue to work together on the formula and the implementation plan. Please recognize that ever since Minnesota stopped institutionalizing people experiencing mental health challenges and instead providing them with county-based community mental health services, these AMHI funds are the critical state support of the local mental health safety net. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mersch. Next, we have Ms. Jane Hardwick. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Absolutely. So I am Jane Hardwick. I'm the Human Services Director for Dodge, Steele, and Waseca Counties. I currently... I lost my electronic version, so we'll go with backup paper here. So I am the Human Services Director for Dodge, Steele, and Waseca County, and we're known as Min Prairie. And I'm also the fiscal lead for MAXA, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm from southeastern Minnesota, and our adult mental health initiative region is called CREST. And CREST would stand to gain funding as part of the redistribution of the DHS funding allocation model if it were adopted without any new money. And I can't pretend that I don't sit here and look across the state and with envy at the level of resources that some of our other adult mental health initiatives have. But at the same time, I'm here to share a perspective that the idea of redistributing the funds appropriated at their current level, in other words, taking funding from one region and shifting it to another, based on the updated formula, will damage an already fragile mental health system. As counties, we have countless experiences where funding was allocated from a limited or non-forecasted grant appropriation that's not adequate to meet its intended need across the entire state. And often in those situations, counties will do the best they can with the resources that are available and find that in the next grant cycle, they no longer have access to that same level of funding. And that because DHS often in other situations spreads that same resource more thinly across a broader geographic area. There are examples in housing programs, child welfare programs, and one that comes to mind for Southeast Minnesota that's more recent for us is our mobile mental health crisis grant. We happen to be an early grant recipient in that area. And in the subsequent grant, we just got our system up and running, got the infrastructure in place. And in the next grant cycle, we got a 45% reduction in the grant resources because DHS spread that same appropriation across a broader array of counties. So that destabilized our mobile crisis system. And we had to pull back on the robustness of our mental health stabilization supports and other training necessary to have an effective system in addition to shifting some of that cost to local levy. This destabilizes systems. So as we face the potential for a redistribution of the adult mental health initiative grants across the state, we are expectedly concerned. So while we do support redistribution of grants in a couple of situations, for example, when a resource isn't being used as it was intended, or when a resource was intended for seed money or startup costs to build up an infrastructure that would be sustained by other intended resources, it makes sense to redistribute those. But that is not the case with the Adult Mental Health Initiative grant funds. If the current appropriation level was at the level necessary to build and support a full continuum of mental health services for people with serious and persistent mental illness and put in place measures of prevention and earlier intervention, I would have no qualms about shifting or redistributing based on a suitable formula. But the idea of taking funds from an area that by virtue of the original distribution formula, when they're still not adequately funded to provide a robust mental health system is troubling. The result will be either that the regions, and you've heard it from the other two testifiers today, those regions will need to reduce the supports for people with mental illness or shift those cost to local property tax payers or some combination thereof. Neither of these is an appropriate solution, especially when we know our continuum of mental health services is still being built. While what we have in place is well done, it is still wholly inadequate. And the demand for mental health services, as you've heard over and over again, is growing. We have a mental health workforce shortage, and our system is very fragile with that increased demand with all of these other factors in place. And the forecast, of course, positions the legislature to make additional investments in better serving people with life-altering mental illnesses that affect not only those people and their loved ones, but our communities. And other parts of our public system. You hear from law enforcement, from human services, from healthcare, from corrections, et cetera. The threads throughout our community are strong and impactful when we don't fully support people with very serious mental illnesses. So to be clear, our local adult mental health initiative region would stand to gain under the formula that's been put forward. But neither MAXA nor I support the planned redistribution until there are additional resources appropriated and a new formula is phased in over the current allocation so that we're not tearing down one region's fragile mental health system to build up another's. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hardwick. And thank you to the testifiers for being here. What I'd like to do is open it up for questions. We've got about 12 to 14 minutes before we end. So we've got time for those that would like to ask questions. I know I do have a few that I have, but I also know that there's probably some others. And I see Representative Frankie kind of coming forward here. Is that correct, Representative Frankie, that you'd like to start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank all the testifiers. Personally, I was made aware of this situation just not too long ago when MAXA was at the Capitol. And I'm still waiting on some information on it, but these presentations really help me to understand what's going on. And I don't agree with this robbing Peter to pay Paul and leaving other people in the lurch, especially when some of the counties that I see are being adversely affected are some of the counties that need the most help. I guess one of my questions would be, does anybody know if there's anything moving forward to fix this situation? Is it strictly a funding thing? Is it a one-time funding thing? Or is it will we need to produce a reformulation to just keep this funding at least stable going forward so we do no harm?
Who would like to try to answer that first? I can open up to any of the testifiers or DHS, if DHS might have ideas what it will take. I've heard some things in the background, but I'd like to see if any of the folks we have with us today have thoughts or ideas or know what they might be aware of that's happening on the landscape. And maybe DHS, maybe some from DHS could tell us what kind of dollar amount increase we would need to make sure that under the current formula, we would have to hold that is being proposed would be needed to make sure that everybody was held harmless so that there'd be no county suffering a loss. Ms. Graham?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Christy Graham with the Department of Human Services. We would need to see the bill language for that and do a fiscal note to determine that amount, but we'd be happy to continue the conversation. And I would defer to the counties who have indicated they are working on legislation themselves, so they might have more to offer.
Okay. Is there anyone from the county that would like to counties that would like to try to answer that question?
Mr. Chair, I can attempt to provide shed some light on it. I was actually looking for my notes here and what happened. Right. They have too many windows open all at the same time.
And I also see Mr. Matt Freeman has got his hand up. If you don't mind, I'll go with him first and come back to you if you'd like to add on. Mr. Freeman,
sure.
If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Matt Freeman, I'm the Executive Director of MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, and also the Human Services Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. We're in the process of working with Representative Ryer on specific language for a appropriation. We're trying to analyze specifically the formula that exists in statute and how that allocation, if it were fully funded according to that language, what that amount would be, while also gathering information like Mrs. Youngerberg referenced through survey to address access and waiting lists. So that language, I believe, is in the process of being drafted, and we'd appreciate your consideration of that bill once it is formalized. We've had discussions with a number of members on both sides of the legislature about this, and would appreciate further conversation about what that amount is to ensure we fully fund this important infrastructure.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Ms. Youngerberg, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, Mr. Freeman said it very well where we're at. What I would like to add is that the concerns really are that it's a funding issue, and that in order to bring equity, it would take significant funding to truly hold counties harmless. There's also in the report an absence, there's a reference to, but an absence of details around tribal adult mental health initiatives. And if there's no new funding going into the pie, basically, so if we have a $33 million pie, and we're adding tribal entities in there, it further redistributes funding away from the adult mental health initiatives, similar to the mobile crisis example that Jane Hardwick gave. You add more entities in, everything gets thin. Really, counties are struggling with the base principle behind this, which is that Rob Peter to pay Paul principle, and how that could, if supported, even in this one instance, really make its ways through all of human services. We do receive grant funding in other areas too. And so how redistribution is looked at from a departmental stance, and if supported, how that might really cause significant concerns across other business areas within human services that provide infrastructure such as child welfare services and others, as shared by the testimony. Mr. Freeman did share a bit about a survey that was conducted, and just on that basic quick survey, and I know in my testimony I did say over 20% of an increase would be needed to address today's waiting lists for services within the mental health initiatives. So that gives a bit of a picture, but not full.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Youngerberger. Appreciate that. Representative Frankie, do you have other questions?
No, I guess my basic question premise was, do we have somebody working on this? Do we need to get on this and start it moving forward? So I'm glad to hear that somebody's working on it, because after I'd asked the questions, I had not received the information. So just looking forward to see what we have coming forward and offer my support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Representative Frankie. And, a couple questions I have is, if I, and I did a quick back of the napkin kind of thing on the dollars, is it seems that if we were to use the current formula and keep everyone whole so that there's no losses, that it may need like a $20 million increase. I'm not saying, yes, no, whatever. I'm just saying, if we were using the current formula. And the reason I'm bringing that up is one of the questions I have is to the counties and to, if DHS wants to comment on it, is how do you feel about the current ratios of the formula? In other words, say if we have the unlimited pot of money out there that it would take to make sure that people are held harmless, are the formulas that are being used out there, the percentages? Because when I was taking a look at it, it looked like They were taking a look at population, social determinants, the ADI and rural allocation, taking a look at how much was SUD percent, deep poverty, medical risk, et cetera. How did the counties feel about the weights and everything that were being used in the formulas? Does it seem that the process through there was good? And now I'm taking, setting the pot of money off to the side. And the reason I'm asking is because if that is a proper formula, then what we should be looking at really is taking a look at what that base of dollar amount we should be using out there. And that's the way I'm trying to impress it. It's more from the dollars and cents thing. So I'd really appreciate the feedback that folks could provide on the weights that are in the formula right now that were being provided in the final recommendations by the state. And I know that's a big question, so I was wondering who would like to try to tackle that.
Mr. Chair, I can attempt.
Thank you, Ms. Yagerberg.
If any other county rep wants to chime in, they certainly may. The feedback from the participants that were in the group, while they do support the weighting of some of the factors, there's some pretty clear response that we got from a number of participants saying that there's still factors that if it's possible to break this down to a scientific math formula, which is where counties are suggesting it's not, because a math formula is not attached to a vision. We would say, we would prefer the formula to say, where are we going to versus what is this math inequity about? Just to break it down to the specific question about the current factors, the two areas that kept coming up by participants in our follow-up conversation were racial inequity was quite absent in the conversation, and they really wanted more emphasis and time and attention to that very important topic, as well as the corrections and public safety influences that can intersect in this topic as well. So specific to that, those are two areas that were really talked about. And that was a very, very much of a challenge, and it appears to be absent. But again, where MAXA and MICA and counties are at is that this formula doesn't talk about a vision. It doesn't say what should our system look like. It simply backs into a dollar amount based on a number of factors. So for that reason alone, the formula isn't something that we feel is adequate.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Youngerberger. Youngerberg, I apologize. The question I have is, you're mentioning that we need a vision out. Oh, I'm sorry, I've seen we're coming up on time here, 9:58. I will follow up with the folks from the county. The one area I'd like folks to think about is, what that vision should look like going forward. It seems like what it's coming back to, that's one of the things that's missing in the process of how that all ties in. I wanna say thank you to the counties for, first of all, the flexibility that we didn't get to last week and being here this week, I very much appreciate that. I appreciate the testimony that's been provided and the thoughts that are important here. And what I'm hearing loud and clearly, and I think the committee is too, is that number one, if we're making changes, it'd be great to have a vision that's guiding it. Number two is that as we're making changes, that we make sure that that nobody suffers any losses in the process, and that we ramp up to properly address the needs that are out there, I think is the takeaway that I'm pulling from here. Are there any, we have 1 minute left. Is there anyone else that would like to add a quick comment? Representative Frankie, any last, okay. All right, with that, I will say thank you to everyone for being here today. I very much appreciate it. This has been very educational for me, and I know for the committee. We will be having our next hearing on Wednesday, March 23rd. Please keep an eye out for details. And I thank everyone for the hard work that's been done on the bills that came before us today and for the conversations that we've had here and the work that will continue to go on forward. With that, have a great day, everyone.